Right. As usual, I'm a human being. I make mistakes. Lots. This morning we're going to talk about these two ladies, Martha and Mary. I won't say anything about the version of the story you've just heard. Just bear with me. Let's just do a little bit of background first. One Martha or two. There are an awful lot of Marys in the Bible. Well, there are a lot of Marys in the New Testament. I read somewhere that Mary was the most common name for a woman in first century Palestine. I don't know where that survey was done or how they know that, but they were confident this was true. Martha came fourth. They were that confident. But Martha is only referred to in two Gospels. We read about a lady called Martha. In both of them, she's Mary's sister. In Luke and in John. Today's session is loosely part of our series that we're doing on Luke. The question is, one of the questions is, were there actually two pairs of sisters called Mary and Martha? Are the stories in Luke and in John completely separate, or are they talking about the same Mary and Martha? And the stories don't match up, so it is a valid question. I'm convinced that this was just one Mary and Martha who were loved by Jesus. I don't think it's likely that there would have been two Marys and Marthas. I think someone would have tried to explain the problem if there had been. But we will look at that a little bit more as we go on. When Rose was talking, this came up. I've heard this question so many times. Are you a Mary or a Martha? Should we do a quick straw poll? Put your hands up if you think you're a Martha. If you think you're a Mary, yeah, prepare to be surprised. Sorry, Ken? Oh, that sounds good. Both is good. Yes, both is good. Okay. I would always have seen, in the way that question's usually asked, I would have always seen myself as a Mary. I would have been sitting at Jesus' feet listening to what he said, and Martha could be burning the kitchen down if she liked. I wouldn't even notice, you know. That I would be a Mary. One thing that doing the research for this this session has done has given me a huge amount of respect for Martha, and I see her in a very different way to what I did before. Let's look first of all at Martha and Mary in Luke. It's a very short passage, and it goes like this. Jesus entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." And the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." So we've got this story, which we think we all understand, of Martha being the person who was working hard in the kitchen while Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet. And Martha is the less spiritual one. Mary is the more spiritual one. And Jesus basically turns Martha off. Let's look at this word here, distracted, which again Jesus uses. He says, "You are worried and distracted by many things." So Luke says that Martha was distracted. The Greek word means basically pulled away from. When it's used in the passive, oh, don't worry about that. It means pulled away from, taken away from. And we should use the word distracted in that sense. Properly, it means you're concentrating on one thing and you get distracted. You understand? That's the way we use the word distracted. It's not the way we think of Martha, though. Because there's two things there. The verse clearly says that Martha was distracted by her many tasks, and Jesus says you are distracted by many things. So we know what she was distracted by. The question is, what was she distracted from? Do you get me? I think what she was distracted from in this story, the only sense that it makes is that she was distracted from listening to what Jesus had to say by all these other tasks that she had to do. It puts a slightly different spin on it because it makes you think that possibly Martha actually really wanted to hear what Jesus had to say and wasn't able to do so. In bits of this, the Greek is really, really tricky. There's always this problem with translation. You know, you have to remember, first of all, that in Greek there's no punctuation. There's no separation of words. So if you take out that full stop there, she had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying, but Martha was distracted by her many tasks. It suddenly makes a bit more sense that she was also wanting to listen to Jesus. And when we come to this bit, she came to him and asked. That's just the best translation that could be done of something which is a bit obscure, because the verb is actually standing by someone. So it says she was standing by him and asked. And I get a kind of a sense of her standing in the doorway, halfway between listening to what he's saying and doing the business, the work that she has to do. That's not clear, but it's the kind of image I get from reading it in the... Hang on, let me read it to you in an interlinear. Martha was being distracted about much service, and having stood by, she said, "Lord, is it of no concern to you that the sister of me alone, me left to serve?" That's a word-for-word translation. So you get this sense of her coming and standing in the doorway, wanting to hear what he's got to say, but also having all this work to do. When we get down to this bit, it gets even more interesting. The Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing." That's a bit obscure even in English. There are at least six manuscripts which disagree with each other, ancient manuscripts of Luke's Gospel, which disagree with each other over what Jesus is actually saying here. So it's not at all clear what Jesus is actually saying here. The people who did the translation have done their best. One of the interesting things I found here, though, is that there is some thought among those manuscripts that Jesus was... What Jesus may have said was, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many dishes." And that doesn't mean pots and pans or plates. It means salads, meat, that kind of thing. You understand me? So the elements of a meal. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better portion. It's interesting that you can look at it that way in the translation, that Jesus is actually immediately talking about the kind of things that Mary, that Martha's worried about. You're worried and distracted by many of the elements of the meal or the dishes, but Mary has chosen the best portion, the important bit, and it's not going to be taken away from her. It may not be exactly the way Jesus spoke, but it's an interesting, I think, quite a possible way of doing it. We're going to go on and talk about the story of Mary and Martha as John tells the story, but here's a question. Would we respond differently to this if it had been written about men? When I first thought that I wanted to speak on this, Claire and I bounce around between each other what we're going to do, and I thought maybe, because Claire's done most of the teaching on Luke so far, I thought maybe Claire would want to speak on this one because it definitely has feminist overtones. And she said no, she was perfectly happy for me to speak on it, but could I ask this question? Would we respond differently to this story if it had been written about men? The only sort of analogy I could come up with is an idea of James and John, with Jesus sitting on the beach teaching, you know, all the people. James is sitting there listening to him. John's out fishing and providing for the family, as he should do, and John comes back and says, "I can't do this on my own. Jesus, will you tell my brother to help me?" Does that put a different spin on it? Not hugely?
Not for me.
Not for you, no?
Yeah, except that people would see that what the guy was doing, that the guy was
doing, was essentially an important thing. Yep. There is that element of this is a woman's place in the kitchen. There's no doubt about it. That's been taken. And if that's the point, then there's no doubt what Jesus is saying. Sorry.
Just on that, the thing that surprises me is the story has Martha inviting Jesus into the...
Yes, yeah.
Where's the bloke? Because surely he compromises himself by going into a house.
Yeah.
He hasn't been invited by the bloke. I don't know.
Yep.
I'm just asking.
I don't know. He wasn't alone. I think that's fairly clear. He probably had his disciples with him. But it's one of the questions about this point. Yeah. No.
One of the possibilities that's been.
Hang on a second, Dyson. Can we get the mic running? Thanks. Sorry, just for that, Ken was asking whether Jesus was compromising himself by going into a house occupied by two women. Go on.
One of the other interpretations that Clara told me about was that in this situation, it wouldn't be impossible to interpret it that Martha is a madam in a brothel and that this is where Jesus is going to visit.
Yep, it's possible. And we will come back to that when we look at how John tells the story.
And that's pretty shocking.
Yeah. I mean, anything is possible, yes. Trish, I think, yeah.
Just on that issue of men versus women, it's always struck me in this story that Martha the issue of men versus women, it's always struck me in this story that Martha was doing what was socially expected of her.
Yeah.
So in a sense, she was more locked into playing her role than a man would be.
It has to be remembered that Martha was the one who invited him in, so she felt obliged to do the work.
Yeah. That's a point that's come up in some of the commentaries I've read, is that because Martha was basically the host in this story, then yes, she had that responsibility to make sure the people were looked after, and a very strong cultural responsibility to do that.
The other thing I was going to say, Peter, is that comparing having two women versus two men in the story, as others have said, I don't think there's much of a difference, whereas if there was a man and a woman in this story and their roles were, obviously different and you could sort of very clearly draw a line, then I think then it would be an issue around gender roles and stuff like that. But I don't think if it's two men or two women that it necessarily changes the gender roles.
Yep. Anyone else on this version of the story? We'll move on. Tony?
Is Lazarus somewhere else? Sorry. Is Lazarus somewhere else?
Yes, he's in the Gospel of John.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Well, we'll get right there, yeah? Yeah. Okay, Martha and Mary in John. That was a surprise. I'm going to read this out from... there's just too much of it. It's a much longer story, so I'm going to read it. It's in John chapter 11 and John chapter 12, if you want to read it. A certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Now that's interesting. Her brother Lazarus was ill, so the sister sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. After having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed two days longer in the place where he was. So I think we're all familiar with this story, aren't we? I would think so. Then after a while, he said to the disciples that he was going to Judea again, and there was a bit of a conversation with the disciples about Lazarus' illness. But also, one of the disciples pointed out to him that the Jews in Judea wanted to kill Jesus and had been ready to stone him last time he was there. Jesus said, "Nevertheless, I'm going." And one of the disciples Thomas said, "Well, let's go with him. We can all die together, basically." Yeah. So there was a risk in Jesus doing this immediately. So he set off to go to where Lazarus and Mary and Martha lay. One of the differences is that John specifically says Bethany. That doesn't match up with Luke's story quite that's where they lived. But that's a technical point, and it's not wildly important. So, just hold on a second. Yep. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. Listen to this. While Mary stayed at home, Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Isn't that interesting? She said, "I know that if you'd been here, my brother would not have died, but even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he'll rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. Everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." So, if you think of Mary as somebody, Martha, somebody basically who isn't a spiritual person, this conversation certainly puts her on a totally different level. She's got a very clear understanding of who Jesus is, that he is the Messiah. She's got tremendous trust in him. And it's interesting that she says that she went back to the house and told Mary that the teacher had arrived and was asking for her. Mary goes there, and all Mary says is, when Mary came where Jesus was, saw him, she knelt at his feet and she said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And we go on the story that Jesus goes to the tomb and asks for the rock to be pulled away. It's actually Martha who says to him, "Lord, it's been 4 days since he died. He's going to smell bad." But I don't think there's any great significance to that. But it was her who raised that point, raised that doubt, even though she had previously said, you know, that seemed to be saying you could raise him from the dead if you wanted to. And we know the story. Lazarus comes out, and all is well. Did he die again? Yes, I suppose he must have done. Never mind, that's not the point, is it? We then go on to the very last mention of Martha and Mary. Well, the last mention of Martha. The number of Marys who were around, it's not quite certain whether this particular Mary turns up again, whether she was one of the Mary who turns up at the tomb. It seems a little bit unlikely, but there is mention of the other Mary, and that might be her. We don't know. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, the home of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. There they gave a dinner for him. Martha served. That's not surprising. Lazarus was one of those at the table with Jesus, so we got the male and the female roles sorted out nicely here. Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard and anointed Jesus' feet and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, the one who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. He kept the common purse and used to steal what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You always have the poor with you. You do not always have me." Now, this story about this woman anointing Jesus with perfume is told in every single gospel and is a bit different in each one. John is the only one who actually names this woman and says, "This is Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus." Were there three or four different occasions where a woman anointed Jesus with perfume? Was there just one and the story became different as it was transmitted orally? We don't know. Buttons. Let's just go back to what Jesus said in the story in Luke. "Martha, Martha, you're worried and distracted by many things. There's need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." He's saying something here which I think he says regularly throughout the Gospels. I hope this doesn't sound slightly irreverent. He says, "Don't worry." You know the passage in Luke? I call it the "Don't worry, be happy" passage. It's also in Luke. Consider the lilies of the field. You know that one? Don't worry about these things. You don't need to worry about them. God knows what you need. You don't have any need to worry about all that sort of stuff. The stuff you need to worry about, not worry about, be concerned about, is your spiritual well-being, not your physical well-being. I think Jesus was talking about this again and again and again. So what's the answer? We're going to finish way ahead of time today at this rate. Anyone else got anything they want to say before I tell you what the answer is? Hang on a second. John?
In the reading from John, there's a reference to the Jews.
Yeah.
Weren't they all Jews? Who specifically were the Jews?
It's a good question, and I don't know what the answer is. It does say that the Jews were there. They were mourning with Mary and Martha over the death of Lazarus. And it says that when Mary got up and left, they thought that she was going to the tomb, and they went with her. And it says that Jesus was so affected by Mary's brokenheartedness at the death of Lazarus. Sorry, and the Jews also. He also mentions that their sorrow affected him so badly that he wept. But I don't know what is actually meant by the Jews there. I assume that it means that it could mean that they were part of a big Jewish community there, which you would expect. Yeah. But it is an interesting point. But I don't know what the answer is. Anyone else? John?
This has nothing to do with your question. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Good. So, Lazarus has been in the grave for 4 days and he smells.
Yeah.
You said, does that really matter? Probably not. And
no, what I meant was, does it matter that it was Martha who actually said he's been in the grave for four days?
Okay. Yeah. So I think
it just seemed to me to be a contrast with her earlier saying something which can be interpreted as being, hey, you could still raise him from the dead.
Yeah, I misunderstood.
Right. Gail?
I thought of this earlier when you mentioned that. I think that was just Martha being practical and worrying about Jesus having to cope with that. I don't think she was had a problem with her faith. It was just, oh yes, Jesus, but don't want you to go through that. How can we manage that so you don't have to cope with that?
That's good. Yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah, I like that. Martha might have been saying, well, hang on, there's going to be a nasty smell because you haven't resurrected him yet. Just concerned for his comfort. Could well be.
And connected with that, there must have been a lot of things said. I think the reason that particular comment was included was to emphasise that Lazarus was really dead and everybody knew it.
Yep, good. Ken?
Just one last thing that occurred to me before we get to the answer is, as adults, can we be really careful about the way we convey this story to kids?
Yeah.
Because the reason there aren't many people sitting in this room right now is because they were told a story that didn't work for them.
So say some more, Ken, or say it again. Sorry, I didn't quite hear.
I observed some kids here this morning saying that God does things really special for people he loves, which includes bringing them back from being dead, so that death becomes the worst thing that can happen to you, and God will make it not happen. And my sense is there's a lot of people who throw out Christianity at the same time they throw out their belief in the good fairy or the Superman or the whatever.
Yeah. It's a good point, yes. Okay. This guy. Anybody know who this guy is? It's actually written on the screen. Yeah? Yes, I know I've talked about him before. I've talked about him before at least twice. I've been studying at Vaux for 5 years now, almost exactly 5 years, part-time. I was wondering the other day, of all the theologians and all the thinkers and all the brilliant people I've been introduced to, during that time, Calvin, Luther, Barth, Henry Nouwen, all those other people. Which of them has made the most impact on my life? And is this guy, Brother Lawrence? And it's an interesting thing that we've had already had this morning a couple of references to cooking. Obviously, if you read the Martha and Mary story, you start thinking about cooking. That's inevitable. But the thing about Brother Lawrence, you may wonder why he's holding a baguette. It's because he was a cook. He wasn't a theologian. He wasn't even an ordained monk. He wasn't a priest. He was a cook in a monastery in Paris in the 1600s. And his relationship with God was so extraordinary that people who were the theologians used to follow him around making notes of the things that he said. Now, if you take teachings of Jesus seriously, Jesus saying things like, it's my Father's pleasure to hide things from the wise and learned and reveal them to little babies, then you should be expecting to hear God speak through people who don't have the PhDs, don't have the degrees, but do have a really strong relationship with God. And Brother Lawrence is just such a brilliant example of this. He was probably not even literate. There are records of him writing letters, but it's quite likely that he actually dictated them to the people. Anyway, here's a couple of things he said. And what it comes back to is this idea of, can you be both Mary and Martha? Yes, absolutely. You most certainly can be both Mary and Martha, and that's actually what we're called to. That's just another photograph of him taken while he was actually working in the kitchen and looking slightly less saintly. Brother Lawrence saw love of God as the reason for doing everything that he did. He said, we can do little things for God. I turn the cake that is frying on the pan for love of him. He said, it is enough for me to pick up but a straw from the ground for the love of God. And I think this is the last one I've got. There's an awful lot of them. If you want to see a whole load of quotes from him, let me know and I'll bury you with them. We ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God, who regards not the greatness of the work, but the love with which it is performed. I think Rose's story about her week and looking after Sarah and Becky's response to that just sums that up. We ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God, who regards not the greatness of the work, but the love with which it is performed. I can understand Martha wanting to sit at the feet of Jesus and wanting to hear what he had to say. The truth is that everything we do can be done as an act of love for God, I think. We've still got 20 minutes for your wisdom. Michael.
I thought I'd just mention here for what it's worth. St. John's Albany has a soup kitchen that they run every Monday out of their hall on the main street in Albany. It's called Martha's. And the reason they called it Martha's was because the people in that church reckon that Martha just deserved a little bit more respect than what we've traditionally given her in the church, that we shouldn't denigrate practical service that... because that's not what the story was about.
Yes, yes, good.
My thought was about Martha doing the work, and there's lots of places in the gospel where Jesus is sort of saying, it's not what you say, but what you do.
Yes.
So I have some sympathy with Martha.
Yep, yep. Luke?
I was just thinking when you were talking that there's often a sense that meditation is something you do when you withdraw from the world and you get very still and focused and exclude the busyness of life, but I'm also reminded that there's a strand of meditation where you actually meditate while doing things, and I kind of found that interesting when you were talking. It reminded me of that.
Yep. Hang on a second. Yeah, there. I think the time of business does not with me differ from the time of prayer. In the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons are at the same time calling for different things, I possess God in as great tranquility as if I were upon my knees before the Blessed Sacrament. Same thought, yeah.
Peter, thanks for that. I actually really identify with Martha and over the last 3 months in particular, because I've had a job that I've found incredibly heavy going, taking my time all the time, and every now and then I wish I could just not do it and get on with other far more spiritual things that I'd like to do. But God keeps reminding me that he's put me there for a reason, and my responsibility is to do what's under my nose. Yes. And I don't quite understand why, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But Sunday mornings have been really precious to me for that reason, that it is the time out from that busyness, no matter how busy it is. So I really do feel Martha's frustration that this is what she has to do and that's what she wants to do.
Anyone else? Okay, I'll hand back to Rose then.